my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I'm one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host and very good friend is Dave.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, one of our great friends, Patreon, and one of the first supporters of Comics in Motion. Where did that podcast go, Dave? Anyway, Mr. Tony Farina, it's his pick this week. And he always picks something out of the bag, Dave, other than Tank Girl. We don't want to talk about that effort, which was picked in the past. Sorry, Tony. I know you'll be laughing about that. But Dave, we are going back to 1999. And it's a movie quite relevant because me and you did the Back to the Office podcast covering the Office UK, Ricky Gervais. And I was saying last episode, what are the similarities of this? So we're going back to 1999 and it's called Office Space. So Dave, have you seen this one before we started reviewing this?
So I hadn't seen this one, and you know, it's a little bit bonkers really, because I in the early 90s, Chris, in fact, was it about 89 when the Sky Dishes first started going off?
Somewhere like that, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I seem to remember that was when I was super into the wrestling. Like, I'd never seen anything like it. Like, we had fucking Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks, didn't we? And on a Saturday afternoon on Grandstand. And then to see these larger than life characters in these massive stadiums, it was, you know, coming into these kick ass rock fucking soundtracks. And it was just, it blew my mind at the time. But, you know, I'd love that. I had MTV as well. And they had, like, you know, things like Headbangers Ball, and I was just like, oh, this is fucking brilliant, this. And, you know, this is when Sky had, like, five channels or something. There was no, you know, 15 different Sky movies channels or anything. There wasn't even a movie channel. It was basically, I think Sky One was one of the only things. And, you know, we've talked about some of the other foreign channels, Chris.
RTL, Dave, RTL. After
RTL,
11.
Sat6.
Yeah. But TV8. Anyway. Fruity.
Fucking love that.
I did.
There was MTV, but I'm sure it's like VH1 or something like that.
Yes, there was.
And there was this this other dodgy fucking foreign thing I'm sure I've mentioned before, where it's basically all these topless women and they're on the beach. It's called Hello or something like that.
I don't know what you're talking about, Dave. I don't know what you're talking about, but yeah.
Discussing it at school, it was bonkers. But anyway, one of the things that was on MTV was Beavis and Butthead. And I fucking loved it. And it introduced me to so many other, like, bands that I'd never heard of. Like, I remember I heard Alice in Chains on there for the first time. And so just absolutely loved Beavis and Butthead. And the creator of that was Mike Judge. So when it came to the sort of late 90s, it must have been about 98. I seem to remember seeing the trailer for this many times before it actually came out. And I thought the trailer was great. And I saw the creator was Mike Judge. And I thought, you know what? I desperately need to watch this. But in 99, that was when I started working. And actually, in the first few years of my career, I was jetting off all over the place. Traveling for work, right? It's a bit of a young man's game, to be honest. I mean, people our age do it as well. But, you know, when you're older, you've got kids and stuff, it becomes harder. Whereas I remember being sent off to Sweden and work was saying, do you want to stay for the weekend or do you want to fly back? I'm like, are you fucking serious? You want to send me to Sweden? Fucking stay in the weekend. But so what it meant was, in that first couple of years, I just didn't have time to watch movies because, like, you'd be away all week somewhere or potentially, you know, a few weeks at a time. So I was off to the like Far East and stuff. So I just didn't have time for movies in my life. And then by the time, you know, you have a bit more time for movies, like it just sort of passed me by. And I thought, I always thought like, oh, I'll have to go back and watch that. And I just never have done. So when Tony suggested it, I was like, oh, fucking brilliant. It's about time I bloody watched this. Because again, it just wasn't one of those that I thought of. You know, if you've got a bit of time on your hands and like, oh, find a movie, watch fucking New Hope for the 1,000th time. So, a bit of a backstory there. Obviously, never directly watched the movie, like I say, saw the trailer. But yeah, nothing else. How about yourself, Chris?
No, and you know what? They've never heard of it. I mean, you know, I have a massive crush. I'm sure we all did. Jennifer Aniston, anyway. You know, in Friends, she was always not wearing bras, Dave. So that always, she always was pointing, Dave. Even to this day, she doesn't. And not that I've ever really looked or anything. But I think what was interesting was one of the sayings in this movie, one of the guys says, he's arse clown. And now I kept thinking, I've ever heard it, and it did come from this movie. Chris Jericho, the wrestler, who like legendary wrestler Y2J, he always says arse clown, because obviously the wrestling changed from being like R-rated to PG, and he'd always, instead of saying like, you know, you're a prick or whatever they would say, and they'd drop the odd swear word in there, he always calls his opponents arse clowns when they're on the mic. And I never knew where it was from, and it's obviously, he must be a fan of this movie. So never seen it. However, I have seen some of the TikToks of little segments, especially when them two guys are interviewing, you know, the main character, Peter. And I want to talk about that in its entirety, because you know what, Dave, and I know that it's not going to shock anyone, I've got stories, Dave, and I'm ready for it. So no, I haven't seen it, and I don't know why, considering me and you loved The Office and the whole context of taking the piss of how out of work in an office and how stupid it is. I have never seen or heard about this. So I'm really, I was looking forward to watching it, I must admit. And it's only 90 minutes, so it's a good throwaway movie, whether you like it or not. But no, I think we'll have a few things to say about this one.
Awesome. Well, should we get into the trailer?
Let's go.
From Mike Judge, creator of Beavis and Butthead and co-creator of King of the Hill, comes a movie about people who go to work. Who are part of a team.
And remember, next Friday is Hawaiian Shirt Day.
Okay, but I could set the building on fire.
Who respect their boss.
We need to talk about your flair.
Well, I have 15 pieces on.
15 is the minimum. Brian, for example, has 37 pieces of flair on today. And a terrific smile.
And need to escape.
I don't like my job, and I don't think I'm going to go anymore.
One of these days, I just kick this piece of...
I'm thinking now it might be more fun to just get fired. And I've always wondered what that would take.
Oh, Peter, listen.
It looks like you've been missing quite a bit of work lately.
Well, I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
That's just a straight shooter with upper management written all over him.
We're going to be getting rid of these people here. Mr. Samir.
Okay.
Not going to work here anymore anyway.
You haven't been showing up and you get to keep your job.
Actually, I'm being promoted.
Thank you, Bob.
This is a... It sucks!
They're gonna throw you out on the street so that Bill Lumberg's stock will go up.
Ooh. It's completely unfair.
Inatech deserves to go down.
We're just the guys to do it.
Tell me about that virus you're always talking about. The one that could rip off the company for a bunch of money.
I'm not going to do anything illegal, Peter.
Illegal? Samir, this is America.
The worst they're gonna do is they put you in a white-collar minimum security resort for a couple of months. You know they have conjugal visits there?
I might be showing them my old face.
Oh, oh.
They let you have sex with women?
They sure do.
Okay, I'll do it.
Office Space.
I know you've been getting pretty depressed about your job and everything, and so I just wanted to tell you, good things can happen in this world. I mean, look at me.
Peter Gibbons is a frustrated and unmotivated programmer who works at a Texas-based software company, Inatech. Unable to stand up to his overcritical girlfriend, Anne, he's in love with the local waitress, Joanna. Don't blame you, mate. But is afraid to speak to her. He's friends with his co-workers, Samir and Michael Bolton, who hates having the same name as the famous singer. Other co-workers are Milton Waddams, a meek collator who mumbles to himself and is mostly ignored by the rest of the office, and Tom, a jaded product manager who is routinely scared of being fired. The staff suffers under heavy, callous management, especially from Vice President Bill Lumberg, whom Peter hates and avoids confronting. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, Dave, having worked in offices for about 4 or 5 years when I left school initially, I fucking hated it. And it was one of my reasons that I loved The Office, and we've talked about it loads of times on that podcast, is it's the ridiculousness of working in an office. And it doesn't matter that this was filmed in 1999 or released in 1999. There's still things relevant in 2023. I've come full circle. I've gone from not wanting to work in an office to wanting to be a fireman, ended up having to work in an office, up to be an electrician, couldn't get my apprenticeship at the time because they weren't doing any locally, to then working in an office, to hating it, doing 12 years on the street, working manual labour, doing a manual job, which I love. And now I'm sort of a hybrid in between the two, where at least when someone pisses me off, when someone's stolen a stapler, I can fuck off and go, well, that's me done. I'm not restricted. I can leave whenever I want and go and do maintenance work or do whatever I want as a team leader. So the comparisons of this movie are brilliant, but just watching the inner monologue and the struggle of the fucking traffic jam. And every time he's trying to get in a lane, and we all do that on the motorway, when you're going somewhere and you're like, right, I'm going in the inside. No, it doesn't work. I always find, Dave, outside lane is life. That's where you go if you want to get in a traffic jam. But it's just seeing his frustration and the brake lights and knowing how pissed off he is. And then you get his mate there doing all the rap fucking music. But when he gets in work, he's prim and proper in it. You know what I mean? So it just... It's not just people who work in offices. It's uncanny, isn't it? We all go to fucking work when really we all want to fucking wake up in the morning and see that we have news about your ticket from the lottery, Dave. And it's like, yeah. Fuck you. Like, I'm not coming in again. So I think it starts off really well. And I still think 1999, I think it still holds up, this movie, Dave. I think it's got a great start to it. A good cast. It introduces Peter really well. He's dead downtrodden. He's fucking frustrated. He's obviously a clever guy, but he's just in a dead end job that he doesn't want to be in.
Yeah. And I think one of the great things this conveys is just how these offices and the environments and the politics can just suck the life out of you. And that fucking commute, I mean, to be fair, Peter's driving like a bit of a prick, right?
Yes.
So yeah. If you're in stationary traffic, don't keep trying to change lanes. So, I mean, the movie's trying to tell us how frustrating it is, but All I'm thinking is, well, if I'm behind you, I'm fucking getting more wound up at you. But yeah, I completely agree. You know, there's so many similarities. But one of the things that stuck out for me, and I think is very much more of an American office type thing, is the high dividers. You've got a big open plan sort of office, but everyone's in these little tiny cubicles on their own. I think Wanted conveyed that quite well as well with James McAvoy. And I'd never been in an office like that, apart from when I'd go to the US offices. And I just found it weird. It was like, I don't get it. I never really understood. I mean, nowadays it's more open plan, isn't it? So everyone can see. But I don't know if it's like, you know, because there weren't actual walls that went up to the ceiling, that just literally little... you know, temporary cubicles kind of thing. So, you know, it's not like you couldn't hear people. Didn't provide you any real sort of privacy. But I just felt it was another one of those things that just made everything deeply impersonal. And, you know, I remember, Chris, and you know what, I'm going to hand over to you in a sec, because I'm sure there must be a ton of stories, but it's the pettiness that, you know, I found so funny. Yes. About the initial third, if you like, or the first act, because I remember we'd have, like, in the very first office. Now, bearing in mind, that first job, I feel like, or certainly the first few years, well, I was flying about, so I was at customer sites, so I was always out and about. So I wasn't in an office. I had an office and I had a desk and everything, but I was hardly there. So, and when I'd come back to the office, it's almost a bit of a treat sort of thing. It's like, oh, right, I'll do my fucking expenses then. But, you know, so I never got caught up in the politics. But as I started traveling less and spending more time in the office, you start to, the office politics kind of permeate you. And I remember there's two things, right? There's a suggestion box. And I remember, you know, I thought, oh, that's a fairly good thing, you know, give people suggestions. But like when they'd read them out, one of them was, oh, you should have better spoons or something like that for stirring your tea. I can't remember exactly what it was, but you can imagine. You can probably picture my face right now. I'm like, bare fucking spoons. Like delivering to customers better or, you know, something like that. Better fucking spoons. And, like, people will get pissed off because, like, you know, you get a delivery of milk in the morning for everyone's tea and coffee. But some people would have cereal. You know, they actually have their breakfast in the office and use loads of milk. And that was, like, a whole thing. And I'm like, oh, I'm not. This is not for me, this fucking petty bullshit. You know? And that's the sort of stuff I just always hate. But, I mean, how about yourself, Chris?
Oh, you know what? I have a story, and I've been, honestly, do I fucking tell it or do I not? This is going to, this is bad. So when I was 17, I got a job. As I said, I'd never wanted to work in office. I got a job at Manchester Airport. I've told the story before. I ended up, you see these aptitude tests. So I wanted to be an electrical engineer when I left school, or a fireman, you know, copper at the back, but a fireman more than anything. I always wanted to be a fireman. And I wanted to get in at the airport because it was one of these places that if you got in there, you were there for life. You got paid loads. You didn't really see a lot of action, but you know, it was just one of these really interesting places. I love Manchester Airport and all that. And anyway, went for these aptitude tests when I was still at school, and I passed them all, but I just didn't get an apprenticeship. I wanted to go Procter & Gamble where my granddad works, electrical engineer. And then I wanted to be at the airport, the different places and all that. Anyway, gets a year at college. I've gone and done my electrical engineering, MVQs, which, Dave, all it helps me do is fix lighting and sockets in the houses, really, because I don't do it as a job. I just, you know, I did it at college. And I learned how to build house alarms, Dave, and car circuitry and all. I did, like, proper electronics. Couldn't fucking tell. You've got the books. Couldn't tell you anything now, Dave. But anyway, did all that. And then the second year when I went to college, I left school. The second year, I did all the tests again, nearly got in at Kellogg's, medical, everything, said you got the job, didn't get it. And the Manchester Airport I'd been a few times. And when I was at school, there was one girl on this like aptitude test in like a classroom of about 100 lads, because it was an engineering one, mechanical, electrical, whichever, because they had a motor mechanics as well and that. When I went back the next year for the tests, there was about six lads and loads of girls. And I'm thinking, fucking hell, this has changed. You know, they've gone back to 96 at this point. This is strange. So anyway, I did the test, the absolute test. It was computer stuff, maths, English, all these other things, and like fault finding. And I got, and he told me this, I came like in the top four or five out of all these people, got offered a job. So I was like, oh, great. Went for the interview thinking, fucking, I'm getting my apprenticeship. No, Dave, it was for an admin job. And I was like, what? And it was £57 a week. So we used to have to cycle to the airport from Manchester, which was like 18-mile round trip. And I was like, I didn't want to work in office. And they said, well, we're not taking apprentices on now until, we haven't taken them on for a couple of years. We've got too many. But it may change. So I said, right, I'll take the job, hoping I can either get in to be a fireman when I'm 18, or I can, you know, get to be an electrical engineer or even a motor mechanic, because they were doing full apprenticeships there on the vehicles. Anyway, Dave, I used to cycle to work every day. I worked in engineering, so they were just like us, all these guys. My boss was a bellend, big rugby player. But what I used to do is I used to blag it. So I used to, which doesn't surprise you, I used to get in at, I think I've told this before, about 7:45, because it was a long cycle. He thinks I'm in from 7. I'd come in, fucking get all my gear on dead quick, have a wash and all that, or a shower, get in. He'd come in, make him a quick brew. And I know I've told this before, but he comes in and he'd fucking come in and go, oh, have you done all that stuff? Yeah. And he didn't have a fucking clue, this guy. He was useless at like computers and that. He kicked fuck out of me, but he was useless in that. Anyway, we fucking hell, this is bad. I don't know why I'm telling this one. I'm glad Sam doesn't listen to this podcast. So anyway, 17-year-old lad, hormones all over the place, Dave. So we were in this Hangar 3, which is near your end where you used to live, the Wilmslow end. You know, that's the junction you get off, and that's where Hangar 3 is. Anyway, used to go there, had a little porter cabin. The lads are all there, Dave. And I got introduced to my first porn movies properly. The lads used to play all sorts of shit on the screen. I think it was hilarious, VHSs and all this. And we had a Pamela Anderson screensaver, Dave, from Playboy. And you know I loved a bit of Pammy then. You know, I do like my Latino dark-haired women, but at the time, Pammy was all the rage. I loved Pam and I did love Jet. And really, this has got nothing to do with this movie, but I was sort of thinking office space, not being aware of your surroundings. So these were porter cabins we were in, on top of each other, two doors in. And I got in one day early. And Chris being 17-year-old, thinking,
oh, no.
Them Pamela Anderson fucking screensavers, where she's got a fucking, you know, she's fully exposed, Dave, top and bottom. I don't know how it ended up on this Windows 95 computer. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to have a danger wank. Right. So I locked the door. It was about 7:30. I knew my boss didn't get in till 8 o'clock. And there was two bosses. There was the ground staff manager and I was water quality and all this. And he was at the other end of the prefab thing, but it was the same thing. Anyway, fucking gets on the fucking stroke, don't I? And I'm literally about to burst. I'd not locked the other door at the other end. The other manager come in and their pants down, bent over his desk. Even put tissues strategically placed so that I could just table. Oh my God, Dave. I got my fucking pants. You know, I was sweating my nuts off and he was taking the piss. And he actually said as a joke, as he walked in, I'm sat at my boss's desk thing, so I've got my belt wasn't tied or anything. And he went, what the fuck are you doing? You got a bit fucking. Oh, yeah. And he knew I went to the gym. I was like, I've just been in fucking press ups and that. He's like, are you sure yours? And then he was taking the piss going, I'm sure he was pulling one off, you know, and all this. And I'm like, fucking wasn't, you know, bright red. And I'm like, yeah, the fucking was. Fucking Pamela Anderson, fucking screensaver. Honestly, Dave, it was one of the worst things I've ever done. Ever. And you know what? I thought about when we were doing the Office podcast, they would tell that story. And I was like, no, maybe not. But I've done it now anyway. It's fucking horrendous. It's a great screensaver. It kept me going, Dave. But I never attempted that ever again at work. Sorry, Tony, this isn't what you expected in Office Space. As you can tell, I'm highly fucking sexually charged, but there you go.
Fucking word.
I could tell you more, Dave, but I'm not. But anyway, that's the one I'm sticking to, Your Honour. Fucking brilliant.
Oh, fuck me. I don't know what to say to that. Oh, I just wish my mind's eye would fuck off with that imagery.
I didn't really plan it out because if I'd fucking missed the tissue, it had gone all over the fucking keyboard on the desk.
Word.
Oh, Dave, I don't know what I was doing. It was a fucking weak moment in my fucking career. I've said some shit on here, but that one I've kept in my back pocket. But seeing as how we'll throw it out there.
Spider-Man's tea.
I can
is
hear him
spat
now.
Spat out all over the place. It's like.
I can hear. I know it sounds stupid, but I can like when he types, you know, Dan's voice. I can fucking hear him now. It's like I do it specifically for him, but I'm not. I've never thought about him like that, Dave. But there you go.
Oh my God. Well,
anyway, back to the movie.
Quickly. So I did recognize, you talked about Windows 95 there. This is probably fucking right geek references, but did you notice when they were playing about, they were doing Windows 3.1?
Bloody hell.
It looked like, which I had no idea. Honestly, Chris, if I think about how exposed to tech kids are now, I mean, I went to uni. We had like a BBC computer, like literally one fucking BBC computer.
Frogger.
That was in, it was all very text-based. There was nothing graphical about it at all. So when I went to uni, they had like Windows 3.1. This would have been in 94. And I was like, what the fuck's this? It seems so, like, different and modern and everything. Like, So, yeah, it was pretty mad. And then seeing it here as well. And what's weird for me is there's a lot in this movie that does resonate, right? Because I work with programmers. I work with people who do quality assurance and stuff as well. And, you know, they're quizzing one guy later on and saying, what do you do? Well, I take the requirements from the customers and I give them to the developer. Well, can't the developer just speak to the customers, you know? And so, you know, all these types of questions and, you know, software development, it's all fucking very, very familiar to me. And it was almost weird to think that this was obviously a very mature business in Texas in 99, whereas in my brain, you know, most of software development didn't start. I mean, obviously it was, you know, 70s and 80s, but because my career started, that was when I first really got exposed to, you know, industrial tech sort of practices and stuff. So yeah, pretty mad. But I mean, he's working in this, you know, Initech environment, and I've got to say, his boss, I think, almost steals the movie for me, because he is such a fucking cock. Now, just what was his name? Cole, Gary Cole, plays Lundberg.
Yeah.
And he does an unbelievable job. Just that way he's sort of speaking is like, yeah, I'm going to have to ask you to work Saturday. Yeah. Like, oh, you fucking bastard. I mean, it's literally, it's Monday morning, I think, isn't it?
So yeah, like, yeah.
How do you know? How do you know? Well, you know, everything's stacked up. And then he walks off. He doesn't just deliver the message in full. He walks off and then it's like, yeah, and I'm going to have to ask you to work Sunday as well. And it's like, oh, you absolute fucking see you next Tuesday. So I think he plays a great role. I believe it was created out of this other character. He'd done an animated show on Milton. But I mean, just watching this without having seen Milton, I just thought he was a bit annoying, to be honest. He's doing all the kind of speaking under his voice kind of thing, just mumbling things. But I mean, he gets shat on like right up until the end of the movie, which I'm sure we'll get to. But no, it's great. And Jennifer Aniston, though, in like a mock kind of TGI Fridays, isn't it? You can see, you know, this software company office is sucking the life out of, you know, those employees, but also this fucking, you know, big corporate chain. You know, that's sucking the life, and it's supposed to be all cool and groovy, you know, 90s cool and groovy. But Jennifer Aniston has only got on 15 flares, you know, which is the minimum. So really, she should have more, you know. And I'm like, oh, fucking hell. And it's Mike Judge. That's him playing her boss. And I think he plays a great role of being just that douchebag boss as well.
He reminds me of, you know, the boss, Dave, he reminds me of him out of Mr. Destiny. You know, that, like, Niles, you know, the one who is, you know, with the glasses and the slick back hair. I know he's not as prominent, but he's a bastard in it, isn't he? And I think as well, like, we all work, and when we worked in offices, you've always got somebody who their fucking life is that office, and they love, Bill Lundberg, is it? They love having the power over people, having the say, there was a guy I used to work with, and he was a sales manager, and he was like, he had a fucking harem of women, Dave. He fucking loved it. He was a right
was he Finchy?
Twat. Yeah, he was a twat. But he got made redundant ultimately, because he was an arse. He was horrible to people, but he just loved having all these women around him. You know what I mean? I'm not saying he did anything, but you know, you just, every time, and they all idolized him. And I'm like, everyone else was like, he's a fucking cock. He was a horrible man.
You know what though? You don't tend to see characters like that anymore. I mean, I'm sure they must be about, but I just don't run into them anymore. But I know what you mean. Like the flashy sort of salesman, and like you say, the women would be swooning, and you're like, can you not see he's an absolute bell end?
Yeah. But
I don't know. I don't know exactly what's changed, if those people disappeared, or maybe they just, I don't know, maybe women, did they wise up? I don't know. And be able to spot dickheads more?
It's weird, isn't it? It's weird because you're right. They were like the norm, weren't they, years ago? Them sort of. Yeah. This is only recent, like last 4 or 5 years, I've run into this character. You know what I mean? Very, very interesting. But I think as like for the movie, the best movie. I think the first 20 minutes are quite slow, not horrendously, because it's a 90-minute movie, so you've got to get to the point, aren't you, pretty quick. But I do love the fact when Peter just goes, "Fuck it, absolutely." Yeah. Fuck it, I don't care. The laying people off, and I don't know about you, but I've done it in my career. You know, I'm a blagger. My job for a long time was a buyer, so I was always negotiating. My mouth gets me in trouble, but it was also one of my biggest assets when I used to do my job, because that's what I was good at. Forget the admin, Dave. I was fucking useless at the follow-up stuff, but getting a deal on a phone, that was my forte, and negotiating everything. I loved all that. But there's a point where you're doing something like this, and Peter just goes, "Fuck it." I have been in situations in my working career, and quite recently, where I have done massive things with like the CEOs of my of companies I've worked for, and I've done it purely by not blinking, by absolutely not giving a fuck, being nice, not being horrible, but basically speaking my mind and telling the truth and being in a situation. And I've had things thrown at me, free stuff, things I've done, interviews, I've done TV stuff off the back of it from working at these places that I cannot explain. And I've sat there loads of times going, how the fuck have I, and I've messaged you all the time, how the fuck am I here? Because I have no academic qualifications for these people, but I've got a gob that gets me in trouble sometimes, but also it can help me a lot. And this is like, because he's losing his job, but I so related to his character of like hating working in an office and going, "I don't want to do this shit anymore." And all I kept doing for years was looking out the window of cars driving by thinking, "What the fuck am I doing sat in here?" You know what I mean? And then eventually I bluffed an interview. I lied on my interview about what I was doing, and I got the job. Away, Dave? So fucking, you know, because a friend of my dad's years ago, and I think I may have said it on this podcast, and a friend of my uncle's sadly passed away years ago, unfortunately, but he was a half a daily. I think so. He used to turn up at our house with clothes from, I don't want to say where they were from, Dave, but basically they weren't legally, and he'd have a bin bag, and we'd get a bin bag on a Saturday full of clothes. And everyone in my family was dressed rather smartly, Dave. And they had all the scams going, everything. Not from, it was like big business scams, I believe. Allegedly, Dave, allegedly. This is like going back to the 80s. But this guy told me once, and I think I've said this, he got a job as a lifeguard and couldn't swim, right? And learned how to swim as he was a lifeguard. And a friend of mine who I've worked with, actually worked with him, I didn't know this till afterwards, and taught him to swim. And I remember him coming to our house with these wet fucking, my mum said, "Can you get any Speedos?" We got to Spain for the first time in like 87 or something. And he come round this gym here, and he went, "Here, there's some fucking Trunks of Christian, these Speedos ones." And they were fucking wet. And he picked them up off the floor of the fucking, I mean, mum washed them, and I fucking wore them on holiday. And I remember years later thinking they were someone's fucking kid's Speedos, and he brought them round and I wore them on holiday. God. They were wet when he brought them round in the bag. Here, you wanted these for Christian, but he would, and then he was a parky. This is true.
Stole them out of the fucking changing room.
Some kid said, Dad, fucking me. Would have been
some
worse if he'd not even
Savile
been
shit going on,
I know, yeah. But he was a parky near us at Longford Park for years after this. And you'd go to see him, and we never paid. Like, we'd go and do the pitch. He did the pitch and put. He was the guy in the pitch and put home. We'd go and see Jimmy, and he'd have a black bag full of stuff. And I'd go, "What's that?" And he'd lift it up, Dave, because his boss would turn up from Trafford, and he'd have leaves on top of it. And I'd go, "What the fuck's in there, Jimmy?" And he'd go, "Yeah, what, do you want any T-shirts, lads?" And he'd have, like, Adidas T-shirts free for a tenner. But he'd put leaves on top like he'd been fucking pulling the leaves off from the greens of the pitch and put. Dave, but he told me the best bit of advice I've ever had of someone, and it will stick with me till the day I die, was he said, "You know, if you're going for the job," he went, "just lie." And I was like, "What?" And this was because of him doing. This is because of him being a
this
a lifeguard.
This is not advice for anyone, by the way.
Well, I sort of partially believe it because he said, "Lie about it." And I went, "Why?" He went, "Because every job you ever do, someone's got to train you how to do it. No matter what knowledge you've got, you will get trained as long as you're like a sponge and take it in." And I was like, and honestly, that, I mean, I know it sounds terrible as I'm saying it as a 44-year-old. It's not something to say to Jordan. Just fucking lie. I took that as like a life moment when I was like 8 or 9 years old when he told me, and it stuck with me. And that's why I always used to think I could do anything, which I can't, Dave. You know, I'd be fucking, I'd be doing a lot better in life.
Brain surgery? Yeah, totally. Yeah. I was top surgeon in California.
Catch me if you can. Yeah, fucking Frank, what's it called? But genuinely, it has helped me believe I can do things and just sort of not blink and twitch. And I've got in situations, I'm like, I don't know how I'm here. And I know that as long as I don't say something stupid, and you know, my like opening me God, but honestly, this sort of thing, when he sat there going, I don't give a fuck, really, fucking shit. I've not been that fucking blatant, but I can relate to Peter's character so much, thinking the situations and the freebies. I've been to New York and everything, freebies. I'm like, how have I ended up in this situation? And that's how you do it. That's how you do it sometimes, not giving a shit and telling him straight. He's brilliant. I mean, I love the fact he goes to do 15 minutes work a day, maybe. I fucking love that. I was pissing myself, Dave. So anyway, I've gone off on a massive tangent as always, but brilliant. I think he's a great character, Peter. So relatable for me.
Yeah. And you know, I think there's, again, I just see so much. And I find it, okay, the hypnotism.
Yeah.
Hypnotism that kind of switches him over into this. He doesn't give a shit about anything really, apart from Jennifer Aniston, fair play.
Yeah.
You know, so switching him into this mode is all right. You have to suspend disbelief for a moment there. But a lot of the other stuff that happens is kind of plausible. It is plausible that, you know, you have these consultants coming in and they're looking, they're probably lean consultants, you know, so they're looking at reducing waste in the company and whatever. So the eventual goal is to make people redundant. And so, you know, they're interviewing everyone for their job, and they come across this character who's just so laid back, and they're just misreading all the signals. And they're just like, well, this guy is clearly upper management material, you know?
What a guy. I've got 8 bosses and all this he's saying. It's fucking brilliant.
Honestly, one of my favorite lines in there is when they said, and it's the guy from Scrubs, and we did him from, he was on Wall Street as well that we covered, wasn't he? And he's like, well, it seems like you've been missing a lot of work recently. He's like, I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob. I think that is probably my favorite line in the whole thing. And they start laughing, you know, ha ha ha, look, he's got a razor sharp wit as well. I just think it is fantastic. And again, I guess one of the things I was thinking about, how, you know, a lot of us are taught and educated to be drones, you know, in the office. We're supposed to be these worker bees, and actually, you know, someone who is clearly dissatisfied and not falling into line, they must be, you know, in the wrong role. They're not the worker bee. They should be elevated above that. And you know, Chris, again, it's one of those, should I say this or not? So probably not. I'll say it. So I ended up in one of the companies I worked for. I ended up, you know, having dinner and sat next to a new CEO. So come in from the States and, you know, going to be the leader of the company and whatever. And I just chatting to him, you know, it's kind of small talk, but not really. It's like, oh, did you catch the match yesterday? You know, that sort of stuff is not generally. So it's just like business small talk, if you like. And, he started talking about his time in Japan. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, so, you know, well, you're here, so you clearly got a passport, but, you know, you seem to be a bit of a world traveler. So I was sort of asking, well, what took you across to Japan then? And I'll never forget his response, Chris. I can't remember the second bit, but his first words were, well, I always knew I wanted to be a global leader.
Oh, no.
I kind of zoned out as soon as those words hit my ears, because I was like, fuck me and you are from such different backgrounds. I mean, when I was growing up, I thought I'd be satisfied with, you know, if I could afford my own semi-detached house and stay out of prison. you know, just have something very modest.
Brilliant. But
definitely, you know, that kind of working class ideal of, you know, like say, owning your own semi-detached house and you know, doing some kind of job, like you say, I don't know, electrician, fireman, whatever it is. And this guy is, you know, wanting to be the next fucking Bill Gates or, you know, Steve Jobs or something. I'm like, fucking hell. I mean, I don't know if it's like a privilege or just, it's definitely a background thing, isn't it? And so that just made me think, you know, the people who generally are these CEOs of companies, these aren't people a lot of the time who've worked their way up through the ranks. They didn't start off working in stores, you know, work their way through sales and everything. You know, well, quite often a lot of them are from sales, but you know what I mean? They're almost bred for it. And so, this whole movie and the interactions, the politics, the way people are just treated like commodities, I think there is so much clever stuff in this movie.
There is. And you know what, I think is, I mean, I love it when he comes in and fucking guts the fish and puts it on there, because you got one of them TPS reports, don't they?
Bit of a dick move for everyone else.
Yeah,
in the office,
everyone else. Yeah, just a little bit.
Oh, the fucking TPS reports. I think that was so great in just how, as the viewer, you're ground down by this petty little stupid silly mistake that is suddenly the talk of the office, and like it's the biggest deal in the world, and everyone fucking knows about it.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's like because Bill comes to him, doesn't he? Says it. Then the fucking other guy comes back, and he's just looking, going, "Fuck off!" You know what I mean? Like, leave me alone. You know, like, and when he says it, I've got eight managers. The consultants are like, "Well, we need to get rid of these fuckers. Why are you reporting to all these people?" I love that idea because that's true. And I got told some ages ago, David, and I think it's so wrong. As someone who's led teams and that, I don't agree with this thing where people say, and I've got told this loads of times at place I've worked, where you need to distance yourself. Now that you've moved into a higher position, you need to distance yourself from the team and the lads I get quoted or have been quoted. And I'm like, but that's why nobody likes you and respects you, because you then become up your own arse. You get a promotion and think you're better than everyone. You're just in a different position. You're in a different position. Yes, you may have more knowledge than that, but you pass that on to people. And you get more respect when you're nice to people and you treat them as human beings and you listen to them. It doesn't always work. You have your disagreements or whatever, but that sort of dialogue fucking annoys me so much when people move up into senior positions in companies and all of a sudden they've gone from being someone you can have a cup of tea with to someone who won't even give you the time of day. And it's like, go and fucking suck my balls. You know what I mean? So I never agree with that, Dave, ever, no matter what position I ever get to in my working career, if I ever get to any.
Well, I do think there's a nuance to it, because, you know, there's another boss that I can think of who's a bit of a chilled out entertainer.
I didn't mean to tee it
up. Wants to be everyone's best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
And spends more time trying to be everyone's best friend than actually being a boss.
Doing his job.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, fuck off then. All right,
Mr. David Brent is, I think, the perfect example of someone who does need to distance himself a little bit more. And don't confuse, like, you know, just not treat everyone should treat everyone else with respect, first and foremost, you know, whatever level you're at. But I do find that, like, when you see Brent, I mean, it's such a great example. And he's trying to do all the fucking inappropriate jokes and everything. You know? Like, was it the first episode where he's like, everyone in the office has woke up at the crack of dawn?
Yeah. So bad. It's so
exactly.
Bad.
So it's, you know, I actually don't think you can be one of the lads when you step into management. I think you can absolutely have a laugh, but it's not the same. It can't be.
No, yes, yeah, so I'm probably talking about a specific person, an individual who just went completely the other way. You know, like I agree, because you've got different responsibilities and so on. We're talking about work now, aren't we? But different responsibilities.
Yeah. No, I've got a bit of a story, right?
All right, okay.
Which is exactly about this. I mean, it's not up to the Phelps standards, but more of an example,
on an office
Chris. Stop fucking. I need to send you. There's an episode of South Park where the internet goes down in the whole of South Park. And there's one little cubicle that has the internet. Randy Marsh goes in there for a wank because he's not been able to because the internet's not been there for ages. It's a fucking brilliant episode. You'll have seen the meme, I'm sure. But I think what you're talking about is that kind of arrogance of, you know, that comes with a certain amount of power.
Yes.
And I remember, like, one of my first bosses, he was a twat for it, right? Because his power was to look, and you had to sit there while he poured through your expenses. Now, I said I jetted off to all these different places. So usually your expenses are pretty sizable. So there's a lot of them. And you basically had to sit there like a fucking school kid while he went through, you know, and page by page, I sat there like, you fucking bellend. And so, you know, I've seen examples where there's like this power hungry, like people get a bit giddy with it and just, he was just a shit boss. I think that's the thing. So there's nothing fundamentally wrong with that kind of hierarchy. We've had it since human beings came out of the caves. But yeah, definitely when they get power hungry. And the one that sticks in my mind, and you know how they say, Chris, like the Murphys, I'm not bitter.
Yeah.
You know, I am bitter as fuck about this one because we used to get like, I think it was about £16 a day. So if we were driving somewhere in the UK, and you were away from home or whatever, you get £16. I mean, that's it. So you could, you know, if you had a McDonald's, you might have a bit of change, but you couldn't like go to a restaurant or anything, or else you end up just paying to be away. But there was an extra line item in the expenses policy for if you traveled somewhere and back in the same day, but it was outside office hours, then you could claim £17. Right, a whole one English pound more than the daily allowance where if you were away for the night and paid for a hotel and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I drove up, it was actually from Altrincham to Chorley. Now, bearing in mind, it was a lot longer. It's not a massive drive, but it was longer than, say, my office commute. So again, line item says outside of office hours. Well, okay, I drove up and back, you know, and to make it into the office for office hours, I obviously had to set off, put £17 down, you know, as is dictated by the expense policy. Wow. The first thing is the admin lady is almost borderline outraged, Chris.
Oh, my God.
I have chosen this £17, escalates it to my boss, and then there's, it's the fucking, Chris, that was my TPS report. That was like, it became this fucking thing. And I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter. It's a fucking quid. That's the expense policy. So I chose that. But it's honestly, having this conversation now is fucking costing me more in terms of my soul. You know, just fuck off. I'll have the 16 then. You know, and just the pettiness, honestly. And like I say, Chris, I am bitter as fuck still.
Well, no. You know what? I don't think when it comes to stuff like that, yeah, it's mad. I remember being at one place, when the telecoms place, which was like the office. It was the biggest parallel to the office I've ever worked at years ago, like 2000, 2004. And one of the lads was a legend, one of the sales guys, because we used to have a Japanese arm that actually created and built all these like call center phones and stuff like that. And he charged the fantasy bar to his fucking expenses and got away with it because he took the clients out.
I never fucking went to the fantasy bar, but I had mates who were always fucking raving about it. And I'm like, fuck's sake, is that not just like a lap dancing place? I mean, it was like Hooters, but
It was a lap dancing place. My mum and dad had the God's honest truth, the cleaning contract for a fantasy bar and long legs in Manchester. We had said gold cards for there at 18 years old, me and our Adam, and I shit myself and wouldn't go in, Dave. And he gave us cards, the guy. One of them, though, the long legs, was run by one of the bloody triads who the Roger Cook report on, so you didn't really want to mess with him. He used to love Elvis. But yeah, we used to go that's a completely different movie, Dave. If you ever get a Yakuza-like movie, I could tell some stories, but not an Office Space. But we did have a gold card for the fantasy bar, and we had a card for the long legs, but we never went. We were proper bottle merchants. So I used to think I was going to get eaten alive, but I've never been missed. I don't think it's open now. They're both shut now, I think.
I assumed it closed out in the 2000s at some point.
Anyway.
But anyway, this is almost like our Back to the Office podcast. Yeah, it's
fucking thanks, Tony.
But I think it even gets mentioned, Chris, but when Peter decides, fuck this company, we're going to steal by taking a tiny bit, off each transaction. They mentioned the movie later, but did it tweak with you where that was from?
It's from, do it on Superman 3, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Gus Gorman?
It's just as you said it. I was watching Superman 3 TikTok stuff yesterday, but I kept thinking, Dave, that's only just come to me as you've just said it now, and I'm thinking, God, it's Superman 3. But yeah, I kept watching it. I was like, what movie is that off? So yeah, good callback.
Yeah, I couldn't believe they went down that route, to be fair, because I thought, surely, I guess by the time this comes out, Superman 3 is like, 16 years old or something?
Oh, easy, yeah.
So, yeah, but I was thinking, it's so iconic, but maybe it's just so iconic for us. But yeah, that was the whole plan. And I will say, it obviously wasn't going to go well. I mean, Gus Gorman was creaming off a massive fucking corporation, wasn't he? This Illitech place. It's just this tiny little, probably got 200 employees or something. So it's like, there's no way they're going to make enough, but I didn't bother to do the maths. But it sort of starts to go badly, really, doesn't it? I mean, I do like the fact that they've been wrestling with this shitty office printer. And again, you sort of take printers for granted now, don't you? But I remember, having trouble. I mean, printers were pretty unreliable in the late 90s and early 2000s. But so when they have that whole, it's almost like a Goodfellas scene, isn't it? Where they're beating the shit out of this printer. You got these white collar workers beating it up, mafia style.
I think as well, though, Dave, one of the bits I want to touch on very quickly, and I agree with that, because it is iconic, because you're right, fucking network printers around this time were fucking garbage. Oh my God. Yeah. You'd have like one printer would work in the office and there'd be about 15 of you stood around it going, is that my document? No. Is that no? Yeah. And then some bellend's printing off some fucking 100-page manual and you're like, are you fucking taking the piss?
Who's this Pamela Anderson here?
Yeah, who's this Pam here? Colour back to front fucking printing, and you're waiting for like an invoice or a fucking quote or something. Some dick's report printing some fucking fax machine manual off or something. Because that's what I used to work for, the company I worked for, the telecoms company. He sold fax machines, printers, fucking call centre headphones, designed their own phones for call centres, everything. When call centres took off, that's what they did. They designed that early mobile phone. So it was quite a big tech company then. But what I would say is one of the bits I thought was iconic, Dave, especially is the cubicle style thing that they have in America, don't they, where it's like these little squares and everyone's in them, and they still do it now. I love when Peter got the drill and took the fucking thing in front of him and pushed it down, and he could see all out in front of him, the road, the grass, the trees. I know it sounds, and it probably wasn't meant to be iconic, but I thought that was so nice, because having worked in some proper dingy spaces where you've worked, I was like, oh yeah, when you finally see the outside, when you sat in a fucking room for 7-8 hours like that, and just to see it, it's like a massive relief. So it's like PTSD. I was like, oh, that's fucking great, that. And I don't think they meant it to be iconic, but for me, that was one of my favorite shots of the movie.
Oh, I don't know. I think it is. I mean, there's something cathartic about it, isn't there? Like I was saying, it reminds me a lot of the American offices. But Chris, I think one of the worst kind of office environments I've worked in, I was literally in the center of the building. So no windows at all. And this when I worked in Liverpool. So, you know, I'd drive from Manchester to Liverpool every day. So think about that, right? Especially in the winter, when the clocks go back in about October and you're driving to work in the dark, you go into an office which has got no windows, and then you drive back home in the dark. It's like fucking, it kills your soul. I don't miss that at all, if I'm honest.
No, and you're right. And that's like, when it's windy and winter and shitty, or it's snowing, there's nothing worse, is there, Dave? I open up now. I'm at work for like 4:30. I'm the first one in. Open up everything, the whole place. It's always me in. And I like it because it's quiet. I must admit, I do look over my shoulder, Dave, when it's dingy, and I'm like, where's the cameras? Just me, you know. I know it sounds really silly, but yeah, it can be depressing, especially when, I mean, I've had a run now the last couple of months where it's light when I go to work. Now it's fucking dark again, Dave. That's me done till next fucking May. You know what I mean? Every day.
This last week, I've noticed in the evenings, it's starting to get darker again, isn't it?
Yeah, 9 o'clock.
It's annoying. I like the light, kind of the light evenings in the summer, but yeah, June 22nd, isn't it? And then after that,
it's fucking downhill.
Just gets darker and darker.
Downhill. But anyway, we have gone some tangents today, then. Let's get back to the movie. Sorry, Tony. But I do like the way that when he decides, Peter, he's going to, you know, hand himself in as such, isn't he? And I love when he puts the fucking note under Bill's office, and the next minute he fucking jumps. I was like, why are they still showing this bit? And he's like, what have I done? What have I done? And it all unravels, doesn't it? He's apologised, obviously, to Jennifer Aniston's Joanna. He's apologised to her, and they've reconciled, and that she's gone in another place. I love that when she puts her middle finger up. You know, it's fuck you sort of thing.
Oh, that was a fucking great, brilliant fucking resignation there. Yeah, I loved it.
That's how we all want to fucking leave a job. But yeah, I love the end of it. I think because poor Milton, he comes to pass that. Paul Milton's not worked there for 5 years officially, but he's still been getting a pay slip. That's fucking brilliant.
But, oh, you know, again, I think it's intentional. It winds you up. But where they're saying about, you know, there was a glitch in the system, so he's still been getting paid. But he doesn't know. He didn't know, you know, so he's just been coming to work, doing the job. And, you know, getting paid, but they're like, yeah, but we fixed the glitch. So, you know, it won't be a problem anymore. So, you know, they're not even going to tell him. They're just going to let him eventually get pissed off and then go away.
Yeah.
You know, again, just that whole sort of treating people like commodities type thing. And it's like, oh, you bunch of bastards. So you don't feel sorry for this company at all. But, I mean, I think it took me a few minutes to really figure out what had happened at the end. I mean, I will say, oh, Peter, there were certain camera shots when I thought, fucking hell, you look like Kevin Spacey with hair.
Well, yeah.
It's not a great thing. But yeah, when he's eventually going to turn himself in and stuff, and Milton, you know, he's kind of walked in, he's seen this whole letter and stuff, so he figures it out, and he's like disgruntled. He's been shat on throughout the entire movie, suddenly turns into fucking Kaiser Soze.
Yeah,
and fucking torches the place. And I hadn't quite twigged that it was Milton until you see him on the fucking beach. Like, so he's run off with all the cash, you know, and fair fucks to him.
Yeah, and that's when you're right. Peter's there, the building goes, he's thinking, hang on, I've got away with this. And then he toddles off, doesn't he? Because he's a bit where he's going to commit bloody suicide as well, though, isn't he, Dave?
Mm.
When his wife comes back and he's got the engine running and everything, and when she comes in, he's like, oh, there's something wrong with it. It won't go in reverse. And she's like, are you okay? And he yeah. runs on. And he gets fucking splattered, doesn't he? You know, so, yeah, it's... I think he's a
good
great...
Good things can happen to everyone.
Everyone,
look at me.
Yeah, look at me.
Like, his best outcome is basically being put in a fucking wheelchair so he gets paid off, you know, yeah. and that's his out of this mundane cycle of, like, fearing for his job and, you know, the shitness of life.
And it's true. It's true, isn't it? And I think even the end is satisfying because Peter ends up on like a construction thing, doesn't he? And he's sort of, I thought he was cleaning up the building that had been on fire.
It's a bit fucking, well, he was, wasn't it? Because he found the stapler and everything.
Yep.
So it's a bit fucking weird, I thought, that ending. Because he's suddenly a construction worker and they've got the contract to actually clean up the place that where he used to work.
Well, I was expecting him to pick up the letter and find the resignation letter, but apparently, Dave, a little bit of trivia, that red stapler was never made. They cancelled it years ago by the company, and because of this movie, they had to do a run of red staplers because everyone was asking for a red stapler.
Right.
Which is so bizarre, I know, because it's a fucking melted, destroyed stapler, but the company's a genuine company, and they said they were inundated with requests. They had to put red back on there, and it stayed for a long time. I don't know if it's still going now, but yeah, red staplers became the norm again. Everyone wanted them because of this movie.
That is a great thing for that company, isn't it?
Yeah.
They've been like, yeah, $10.
A staple.
Yeah. No, that is great. But yeah, I mean, it is painful. Like I say, I didn't feel like Milton was a central character, but like he just got shat on constantly by everyone, wasn't he? You know, and like even when he's trying to get some cake later on and everyone's like, oh, can you pass it along? He's like, yeah, but the last time I did that, like, I ended up with no cake and he ends up with no cake again. So yeah, it turned out well for Milton.
No,
and everyone, like you say.
Yeah, it works out quite well. Good movie. So should we get into the scores, Dave?
Let's go.
So, Dave, honestly, Tony, great pick. I'm sorry we've segued off, and I don't want your ears to survive my story at the start, but I've been sat on that for ages, Jesus. Thinking, do I tell it? Honestly, the Office one nearly got it, Dave, but then I thought VHS is probably more, especially this one in the back pocket. So, anyway, I enjoyed it, as you say. I can't really slag it off. I think 90 minutes is the absolute perfect for something like this. I know it's supposed to be a comedy and these bits in it that are funny, but there's a lot of like true to life things. If you've worked in offices or any environment where people are just bellends, and when people and that whole thing about it's only a job, when there's redundancies, it is only a fucking job. Everyone thinks it's not, but it is. They can get rid of you at any point. And knowing, like, you know, Peter's journey of just going, fuck this, I've had enough, you know, and it actually works for him to a point in the movie. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Loads of parallels to my own working life over the years, and I just thought it was a great movie. So I think I'm going to put it, Dave, at the top of Hill Valley. I think it's a great movie. I'd probably watch it again. I get a lot of the pop culture references, and now I understand where some of these things have come. So, no, yeah, good movie overall, and good pick, Tony. So, about yourself, Dave?
Yeah, very good. So, I, like you, delighted Tony picked this one and really enjoyed watching this. Now, I have just watched it the once, but I will definitely be going back and watching this one again. I loved some of the, you know, the tone of the movie, just sucking the life out of you. Like, you know, obviously, because we've gone off on so many tangents, there are so many parallels to just, you know, work life, aren't they? So, you know, I like that. Like, say, the pop culture references that have spawned out of this movie. The fact that Jennifer Aniston is a Brucey bonus.
Yep.
And, you know, I just, yeah, just thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought, you know, there's some really understated comedy in it as well. And I know it's a comedy movie, but like some of it's just really understated. But when Peter's talking to his neighbor, who, you know, he's got tiny thin walls because that's all he can afford, I guess. And he's like, what would you do if, you know, you won the lottery? I can't remember if it was winning the lottery or whatever, you know, what would you do with all this money? It's like, two women.
Oh, yeah.
Without blinking or anything, just the deadpan serious delivery I thought was brilliant. But yeah, so really enjoyed it. It's not quite at the top for me. I'm going to say it's a Pleasantville, but you know what? I think I am going to, as I said, I'm going to watch this one again, and I've got a feeling it might be one of those that rewards rewatching as well. You know, you watch it more and more, and it just gets better and better. So I could see that maybe my opinion could change and go up a bit in future years.
No, honestly, great stuff, and what a great pick from Tony. And say that, Dave, now for something completely different for next week's pick. So... our good friend, Mr. Matt Bates, fellow Las Vegas lover like myself, Black Country vlogger as well on YouTube, if you'd like Matt's YouTube stuff as well. And he's a patron and a massive supporter of the podcast. So he's picked Dave. And I'll give you a massive build up because I've never seen this one. But Dave, we're going back to 1987. And I think we should just play the trailer because this one's called Anguish.
Mrs. Pressman had high hopes for her son, John.
John's like your best boy, isn't he, Mother?
The LP on.
Yes, John. You're my best boy and the best surgeon in town.
But the world conspired against him.
Mary Ann, go into the line.
I get upset. I
oh, no.
Do you hear me? Do
this
you
is
hear
horror,
me?
Isn't it?
Do you hear me?
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Until John found a way to please his mother.
Oh, my God.
You did a good job,
it's
John.
It's going to be a bit of a psycho job, isn't it?
Oh, no.
All the eyes of the city will be ours.
Oh, shit.
And even get into the movies.
One place.
You have no idea.
Oh, fucking hell.
Really suffer.
I tell you what, the music is doing a good job, isn't it? Making it eerie.
Yeah.
When you disobey mother?
Anguish.
Oh, fuck me.
Oh, no. Fuck a doodle do. Fucking hell. Matt Bates, what are you doing? What are you doing? Oh, no.
I think this is one that on the pile of, you know, when, you know, I said many times, 70s and 80s parents, fucking shit. Right, this is one where yep. I'm sure he's watched, and it's like, you know, mum and dad shouldn't really have let him watch this at that age. But Chris, that looks, yeah, maybe one to watch in the daytime.
I think so, Dave. You're talking about like fucking parents and that. As we were talking before about Tutti Frutti, and I know we've talked about it loads of times, but that was a family thing. Friday night, 10 o'clock, put fucking German fucking dodgy TV on Tutti Frutti when we're all sat around as a family watching all these people getting the tits out and the fucking dicks out and everything. It's like, and that was the norm. Okay? And we're all laughing and joking as a family, Dave. We've got some serious problems.
Oh, no. I mean, it wasn't family time for me, Chris. For me, it was serious business.
Well, Dave, it may have been if you were out. Yeah. Fucking brilliant. Anyway,
we fucking
thank you.
Jump around, don't we?
We have on this one, Jesus Christ. Anyway, big thank you to everyone. Thanks, Tony, again, and Matt, for picking next week's episode. If you want to support us, guys, get over to patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback and come and join us and support the podcast if you want. We really appreciate it. If you want to email us, thevhsstrikesback@gmail.com. And as always, please follow us on social media @vhsstrikesback. So the roll call of honor for today is, when I get the... proper page up, Dave, is Mr. Tony Farina, John Hammond, Blake, Maths, Jax, Herb, Lucky Lily Green, Kent, Heath, Matt, Timothy, Susan, Justin, Dan, Trent, Stephen, Dylan, Helen, and Lee, the magician. And Lee's great, Dev. I said it before, but following him on social media, that guy is very talented. But anyway, thank you always for supporting us, guys. It's really, really good. And Dave, all I'll say to you is, Dave, after Matt's pick, it's mine. It's all mine, and I am not making a mistake again. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not doing it, Dave. just you watch you out, my friend.
You've been fucking Harry Maguire of this year for your picks.
Fucking hell. Overpriced. Fucking rubbish. I know. You're completely right, Dave. I've done myself in my own picks this year. Not even you. Knowing you're pissed off watching these movies makes me chuckle so much. But knowing that I've been watching and pissed off more than you fucking is horrendous. I've just completely flipped the podcast on my head. Anyway, Dave... What are you going to take us out with today?
Well, I do think there's lots and lots of quotable lines. And like I say, I love probably my favorite one that I've said before is the, you know, I've not really been missing work, Bob. But I'm going to choose something else because this is a conversation between Michael Bolton and Peter Gibbons. And Michael says, Peter, you're in deep shit. You were supposed to come in on Saturday. What were you doing? And Peter responds, Michael, I did nothing. I did absolutely nothing. And it was everything I thought it would be. And that sounds like a great fucking weekend to me. So thank you very much, sir. Thanks yes. to all our listeners. Thanks to all our supporters. And we'll speak to you next time.
Bye.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now?
What are we going to do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back. Because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's odd.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Get to the chopper!
One ring the bell.
All right. Ding, ding.
Bust you up. Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Come on. Ain't so bad. Ain't nothing.
You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You just a stupid
fool. Yeah, maybe you're stupid.
You
ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months.
Oh,
I must break you.